You know what? I've given up. Fuck the podcast. Just listen to that fucking song. You learn about them yourself. Fuck. Yeah. I'm going to go sit in my room and eat a bowl of cornos and cry about the current state of the world or something. I don't know. I'll figure it out. Anyway, listen to the song.
Howdy. How's it going? I'm Eric Stewart, and you're listening to Landfill, a podcast where I spend some time info dumping about things that I find interesting enough to a point where I feel like I just have to talk about it. Thank you so much for giving me a listen. It really means a lot to me. I really hope you enjoy listening to me talk about information that's mostly interesting. It's mainly useless, but interesting no less. I think so, at least. I hope you do too. Of course you do. You're listening to this. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy. I'm going to try this one a little bit differently. I haven't really had the time to actually just sit in my computer and just like, you know, just start recording for like, man, a good while now. Because, you know, it's been crazy at work. So I'm going to try recording this on my phone and I'll see how that goes. I got to say, man, this is probably one of my favorite historical figures, apart from, like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt and, like, a handful of others, just because for, like, literally his only significance in history, or at least his main significance in history, is that he was just, like, an absolute mad lad of a fucking individual. Like, his surname, I'll just tell you about it. Grigory Rasputin. I don't know his full name. Well, I have it written down, but whatever. Grigory Rasputin was born in Siberia in Russia on the 10th of January in 1869. He began turning heads pretty early on as a child because his parents were disturbed by his visions of divine forces and his supposed ability to heal horses with a touch. And a lot of villagers were even scared of him, believing him to be controlled by the devil. He also apparently seemed to know the future, along with, you know, the healing powers and the divine visions and all that. His name originally was Grigory Yefimovich Novik. I promise you, if I didn't write how that was pronounced, I would never be able to fucking pronounce all that. I typed his name, and then I typed, you know, how to pronounce his last name. But anyway, originally his name was Grigory Yefimovich Novik, but, you know, him getting the reputation he had for being promiscuous eventually earned him the surname Rasputin, which was Russian for the debauched one. So, yeah, pretty early on, that tells you that he was kind of a mad lad. That theme kind of seems to continue throughout his later life. He had a wife and four children by the time he was 30 years old. He was also kind of a troublemaker. Oh, fucking hold on. First off, the fact that he did all the shit that he did, and he meanwhile this whole time that he had a wife and four children, it's kind of funny. It's kind of messed up, as you'll probably find out later, but, like, it's kind of funny to me that he's just doing all this shit, meanwhile his wife and kids are just like, where's dad at? Oh, dad's off doing, you know, he's just being a goof again. Just don't worry about it. Goof is a bit of an understatement. He was a bit of a troublemaker in his early life, though. He had earned a reputation as a drunken thief. He was also accused of stealing horses, and he fled to a monastery to lie low. And it was at this monastery, was where he was introduced to the Khlisti, which was a sect of the Russian Orthodox Church, which was also kind of an anti-church. They gathered in crypts, and part of the service included working themselves into a frenzy and dancing, falling onto the ground, and then just having a kind of congregational orgy. Part of that was because they believed that in order to cleanse the sin from your body, you had to sin a lot to purge it out, pretty much. Which pretty much meant that if your sin was that you like to fuck a lot, then the way that you purge yourself of that sin was you fuck a whole lot. like more than you probably usually already did. And I guess that kind of like makes you not want to do that thing anymore. Is the theory? I don't know. Russians are weird. He stayed at this monastery for a few months, and he even made a friend who used to advise the royal family. He decided that he was going to try to follow this friend in his footsteps, and he became a traveling monk. There were times where he would wander for up to a couple years, like in, you know, the woods of the Siberian landscape, before he even went back home. A couple years he would wander. He really took that seriously, I guess. Wandered for a couple years before he went back home, and sometimes he even wore iron shackles at the same time to purposefully make it harder on him. Purposefully is a hard word, y'all. He had a vision of the Virgin Mary, who apparently told him to go to St. Petersburg to help the royal family. On his travels, he impressed a number of aristocrats and clerics who sent word to the Tsar about him and his exploits. And he soon, after this, became friends with the Tsar and the Tsarina of Russia, which, if you don't know at this time, was Tsar Nicholas and Tsarina Alexandra. Because of, his little exploits and shit that he had, he had them believing that he was, a holy healer, because, he heals horses with a touch and all that shit. He had asked to, at a certain point, he had asked to see Alexei, their son, while he was suffering from an injury in his knee that he had succumbed to while he was, riding a horse. Apparently, Alexei was like that a lot. Like, he would, be riding, because Alexei had hemophilia, which, if you don't know what hemophilia is, it basically means that, your blood doesn't clot. So, if you get a cut, even a little tiny paper cut, on your hand or something like that, you're not going to, form a scab or clot your blood or anything like that. So that little paper cut could potentially be fatal, because you could just bleed out from that if you don't get it taken care of. Or at least it would be if, we weren't living in the modern times where we understood shit like that a lot more intimately. But, you also got to remember, this is also, back just before the First World War. So then, Russia was at the time a backwards feudal country that was lagging behind everywhere else in the world, pretty much, in terms of technology and, the progression of their people and shit like that. But I digress. He had asked to see their son Alexei while he was suffering from an injury that he had sustained while he was riding a horse. Where the fuck was I going with that whole hemophilia thing? Oh yeah, anyway, Alexei had hemophilia, and even though he knew that, riding horses and shit and doing dangerous shit like that would, be dangerous, he would still do it anyway, because, he's a kid and he wants to, do kid shit. He would still go out and do it, and then he'd get hurt, and then Tsar Alexandra and Tsar Nicholas would be like, "No, see, Alexei, I told you that this is gonna happen." They probably didn't say that, actually. They probably didn't even sound like that. But you know what? That's the voice that I'm going with. But yeah, he would do that shit a lot. This time, he actually got hurt to a point where he had to be bedridden from it. And Rasputin had asked if he could pray over Alexei, as though he kind of just knew what was wrong with him. And supposedly, he healed Alexei of his hemophilia after this point, which... He didn't really heal him, because what he was doing, what was happening... Oh, there's a plane. The plane is low. What is he doing? Sorry, I just got distracted. He didn't actually, heal him, because what was happening was the doctors were giving him, aspirins and shit. And that... I'm not a huge... I don't know, completely. I think it was aspirin, but... There was some medicine that they were giving him that was, the thing is, aspirin thins your blood, so if you try to take aspirin when you have hemophilia, it just makes things worse, pretty much, is the gist that I got from it. So they were giving him this aspirin, and it was making it worse on him, But really what Rasputin had done is he just stopped the doctors from, you know, feeding him all this aspirin and thinning out his blood and making his condition worse. And he just healed up naturally after that. But, you know, enough, you know, not believing in the magic. But after he quote unquote healed Alexei from his hemophilia spiritually, he pretty much secured his bishop. Yeah, he pretty much secured his position in the royal court. He also met, you know, the empress on a weekly basis because, you know, he's in a really good place with them because, hey, I healed your son. We're friends now. His influence began to become widely known across Russia. He had moved into a new apartment, you know, in St. Petersburg, closer to the Russian family. They're all fucking Russian and Eric, stupid. He had moved to a new apartment closer to the royal family in St. Petersburg, and he entertained curious visitors here as well as he lived here. So, like, he would just have, you know, just random people at his apartment just entertaining them and shit. Just like, hey, here's my house. Let me do some magic on you. Woo! Magic. I don't know what that noise was. He also eventually began developing his own doctrine, which was pretty much based on what he learned from the Christi. One of his disciples eventually became convinced that he was Christ, and she even left her husband and children in service to him. At one point, having been caught, you know, in this apartment with Rasputin, holding his penis and shouting, "You are Christ," and something else. Man, imagine. I always think that's funny. Imagine being so good with the ladies that you just randomly have some chick just grabbing on your penis, just being like, "You're a god. Please love me. You're a god." That's funny. Senior politicians in Russia eventually began hearing rumors that he wasn't to be trusted, is what the rumors were saying. The secret police were assigned to study him, and his actions were very well documented after this point, going as far as to tell, you know, what he had eaten or drank on any given day, as well as, you know, the cult shit. At some point during one of his rituals with the disciples, he found himself taking the devil within himself, you know, quote-unquote the devil, and the authorities of the church began to notice, lured him to a basement, and accused him of using the devil to work his miracles, and then they beat him, with a crucifix during the scolding. Rasputin, of course, reported this to the Tsarina, saying the clerics had tried to kill him, and then they were banished from the city within a month. One of them also fled to Finland, disguised as a woman, and plotted to kill him. On his way to send a reply telegram, a woman who was sent by the same man who had fled to Finland to plot to kill Rasputin had approached him, to which he extended his arms to greet her, because, you know, he's a nice guy. He extended his arms out to greet her, to which then she lunged at him with a knife and essentially began disemboweling him. She grabbed this knife and she's just, you know, gutting him like a fucking trout, dude. Like, ripping out his entrails. It got really bad. Because, like, he had to have, like, major fucking surgery after that point. But, amazingly, he survived that. Considering the technology at the time, and, you know, Russia at the time, he amazingly survived that attack. So that's good for him. Just a couple hours before the attempt on Rasputin's life, the Archduke Franz Ferdinand, and if you know that name, then you know what's happening. Archduke Franz Ferdinand had been assassinated in Sarajevo, which pretty much snowballed into, you know, the beginning of the First World War. There's like a series of events that happened that led up to it. It wasn't just, oh, Franz Ferdinand's dead, let's go to fucking war. It was like a whole series of things. Like, someone blamed Austria and Austria blamed someone else, and like Germany is like alliance with Austria, kind of. Some shit like that. I don't remember the details. But either way, they snowballed into the First World War. Rasputin was still in the hospital while the war had begun, which was an issue for pretty much
the entire country, because he was likely the only person who could have convinced the Tsar out of mobilizing the army. He even wrote a letter to the Tsar from the hospital in Siberia saying that joining the war was a bad idea for Russia. The Tsar, of course, ignored him, considering the fact that declaring the war had made the Tsar popular, you know, once again, because previously he was starting to lose popularity. The Tsar Nicholas left to fight in the war, and then the Empress, after that, had summoned Rasputin to the palace and had asked for counsel on the war efforts. And with Nicholas gone, this pretty much, not officially, unofficially, kind of made him the Tsar for the time being. Over time, the Empress started getting more and more dependent on him, believing that the safety of her family rested solely in the hands of Rasputin. Pretty soon, he began appointing his buddies to political positions. He had appointed four prime ministers, four war ministers, and six ministers of the interior. Since they were, of course, politically uneducated, they were pretty incompetent in their positions. They're actually pretty incompetent, you know, in general, actually. Like, just outside of their positions that Rasputin had given them, I guess they were just generally just not functional. The war had pretty much, you know, left Russia in ruin. Petrograd, as the capital was later renamed to after the war had been declared, became a hotbed for protests, rumors, and refugees. The suicide rate had tripled. The cost of bread went up by like four times. Bakeries were looted, and Russia was pretty much on the brink of revolution.
That's called foreshadowing.
Rasputin was very sensitive to all this, with whom his battles with the devils were proving already to be a little bit too much for him. His health began to decline, bringing his supposed healing powers down along with it. And it was around this time that he started feeling like his death was just around the corner. He even went as far as writing to the Empress, prophesizing his own murder, saying, and I quote, "If any of your relations bring about my death, then none of your family will remain alive for more than 2 years. They will all be killed by the Russian people. Tell your elders that I have already paid for them with my blood. I shall be killed. I am no longer among the living. Pray and be strong." The country began to be divided by his very presence alone, with some believing him to represent old Russia advising the throne, and with others seeing him as all that was wrong with the Tsar and the court. Russian nobility pretty soon had had enough of the debauchery that he was taking part of. They soon began to plot to assassinate him. They lured him to a party at Felix Yusupov's palace with food that was supposed to be laced with cyanide. Surprisingly, didn't kill him. It's because... because Yusupov documents that what was supposed to happen, that's generally what's, you know, accepted in a lot of historical documents, is that he was just immune to, like, you know, the poison. But some historians think that the poison was straight up not introduced at all for whatever reason went about, whether or not the person who was in charge of putting the poison in the food and the wine was either sympathetic to Rasputin or he just forgot about it. I don't know the reasons, but he just straight up just didn't put it in there. But either way, he didn't end up getting poisoned, which is why he didn't succumb. When the poison didn't work, he pretty much just, like, excused himself from the party. The thing was about to happen, like, you know, in the basement of the place where the party was at, you know, Felix's apartment or whatever. Or house, whatever the fuck it was called. It was supposed to happen there in the basement, and the party was upstairs. So Felix went back up to the party upstairs. He excused himself up there. And while he had excused himself, he grabbed a revolver, went back down to the basement to Rasputin, and he said something to him. I don't remember what he said. He said something like, you know, look to the cross because you're going to see God or some shit like that. I don't know. But he said that, and then he just shot Rasputin, like, multiple times. I don't know how many times, but he shot him, like, multiple times. Rasputin, you know, fell to the ground. He thought that
you know, Felix thought that he was dead. After he shot him, he went to go, you know, tap on his body with his foot or whatever, and he like lunged at him. Felix freaked out. He went back upstairs to get a buddy. He came back down there with his buddy, and then he was just gone. Rasputin had gotten up, started walking out the door, and tried to leave. He tried to escape, and then, you know, while he was trying to escape, they just continued shooting at him until he fell over into the snow, and he was unconscious. And then after that, Felix had climbed onto him, and then he just started just beating the absolute hell out of his body, his face, and all that shit. Later on, after all that, they had dumped his body in the icy river, and some accounts even believe that he was even still alive. Even after that, he was still alive for even a short time after all that. Even after being shot, being bludgeoned, and being dumped into the icy cold river. Because when his body was discovered later on, his arms were outstretched and his lungs had water in them, which suggested that he had actually drowned was the cause of death. But either way, he's dead now, so it doesn't really matter all that much whether or not he, you know, drowned or was you know, bludgeoned to death. Because, you know, he's dead now anyway, so it doesn't matter. Just as he had predicted, his death had indirectly led to the death of the royal family, which was perpetuated by the Red Army. They were all gunned down in a Siberian cellar, including the children. Rasputin's friends were also shot by firing squad. Civil wars had broken out, and Russia had pretty much imploded at this point. His death pretty much started a chain of events that led to the Russian Revolution, backed by the Bolsheviks. This right here is my favorite thing to tell people about him, though, because it's so bizarre. After his body was found, after he was assassinated, his disciples had cut off his penis, pickled it, preserved it in like some preserving fluid in like a jar or something. It got traded around some amount of times, and it is now currently on display at the Russian Museum of Erotica. And if you're ever curious to see this fucking thing, it's it's surprising. It puts me to it makes me feel inferior when I look at this thing. It's fucking big, dude. It's 11 in. The thing is 11 inches long. 11 inches long, and everyone can just see this thing, and it's glory, just sitting there staring at you. Russians are fucking weird, dude. But anyway, yeah, that's Rasputin. It's probably a good thing that I got around to this finally. I started doing this fucking episode. I started doing this like 2 months ago. I started doing this in like early to mid January, and it's now like the 3rd of March when I'm finishing recording this bit. Procrastination sucks. Whatever. I got it done now. Fuck it. Anyway, yeah, that's Landfill. That's the Rasputin episode of Landfill, rather. Thank you for listening. If you enjoy, please give me a subscribe. It means a lot to me that you stayed this long to listen. I'll have another one another time. I got a good hyper obsession to put something out about. You'll find out about it soon, probably. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I can't really have a certain like schedule right now. Work's kind of crazy, but I'll see what I can do. Until then, have a good one. Later.